A new statewide association is threatening legal action in response to a recent behind-the-scenes decision by the State Department of Health affecting the administration of a popular home care program. For more on these developments, we're joined by Linda Clark, a partner and chair of the healthcare litigation practice at the law firm of Barclay Damon, which has been retained by the New York Advocates for Home Care. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Good morning, David. Nice to be here.
So the precipitating event, at least for this chapter of what is really an ongoing drama, was the decision by the Cuomo administration to authorize 68 out of nearly 400 organizations to serve as consumer-directed personal assistance program providers to more than 100,000 New Yorkers. As far as your coalition is concerned, why is it a big deal who's authorized to, I guess, direct the care through this program?
So this community-based network of providers that is spread out across the state is really a reflection of the state itself. So each of the agencies really has a fair amount of experience and expertise serving the particular populations in their particular district or area. So the sudden constriction of that community-based network will have a significant impact both on the consumers who are being cared for and on the people who care for them.
Yeah, what is the potential impact? Does this mean New Yorkers might not get the same level of care, might not get the same attention of care?
Each of the consumers who are self-directing their care at home, hopefully so they could stay in a home setting rather than a long-term care setting, has a relationship with their agency, with their CDPAP agency that is called a fiscal intermediary.
Right.
And over a period of time, they have developed a rapport, a protocol, a relationship that really helps both the consumer and the people that are caring for them who are operating in some ways legally as employees of the fiscal intermediary. That's a very delicate relationship and a delicate balance. There's been no demonstrated reason offered by the Department of Health for this sudden curtailment in the scope of the network. And you can imagine the disruption that could occur as each of these consumers and their caregivers has to scramble to try and find an alternative agency that's a good fit in the many ways that CDPAP providers serve their consumers. We could talk about the cultural nuances. We could talk about their expertise and geographic reach. Mm-hmm. But those are all really important, well-established components of the existing network that really benefit the consumers that are being served by the program right now.
So the idea that 68 is problematic is partially, at least it seems, based on the idea that the current framework of providers, the current number, the current makeup, is doing a good job. Is it your assessment that the fiscal intermediaries that are doing this work now are all doing a good job and should have all been reauthorized by the state?
The program has not been without some controversy in certain areas. There's not a Medicaid program that you could find that hasn't had some bumps and blips along the way.
Yeah.
And that's an important role of the state to properly manage and supervise any Medicaid network of providers. But in fact, if you really look at the CDPAP program, it's very, very well received by the consumers. It's doing a great job of keeping people independently in a home setting and avoiding really flooding long-term care facilities in a way that's just not beneficial to anyone. So there's really nothing broken here that needs to be fixed in any wholesale way. What I'm concerned about is that there's really kind of a deflection of regulatory responsibility here. There was an audit done by the federal government of the state CDPAP program a number of years ago that was somewhat critical of the state's supervision of the program. I think that resulted in a substantial payback by the state to the federal government. And unfortunately, the reaction here has been to kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you look at the Medicaid redesign team reports and analyses, there's no financial benefit even projected for this move. So it's very hard to justify the chaos and the potential disruption that's going to occur here relatively quickly, depending on how the program is implemented, when juxtaposed against the very, very debatable benefit to the state. It's really a matter of administrative convenience that we're talking about here.
Well, it's interesting to hear you make the case that there is no financial upside to the state to really culling the number of providers that are authorized to administer this care. So what is the state's argument then for drastically reducing the number of organizations who can direct this care?
Well, I think their justification is that a smaller network is easier for them to manage, easier for them to police, perhaps from a fraud, waste, and abuse perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, and we understand that. I think everybody could understand if there was some additional criteria or curtailment of the program to address any problems that have been documented with the CDPAP program. But boy, going from almost 400 to 68 is extremely drastic. There's a lot of problems with the way that this RFO is the term used to describe this reconfiguration of the network. There's a lot of problems with the way that this has been implemented.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and my guest is Linda Clark, an attorney who has been retained by the New York Advocates for Home Care in the wake of a decision by the State Department of Health to limit the number of organizations that can direct a popular home care program. Well, and that's something you mentioned in the press release, where you talk about there being legal issues to explore with the state's selection process. What are some of those issues that you see as being potentially legally problematic?
We were on the front lines of this process throughout the RFO, representing, you know, significant numbers of agencies as they waded through this very, very complex document that dictates how to go about resubmitting basically your application as a provider to stay in the network. And we also participated in the appeal process. So if you were not a successful applicant, you had the opportunity to submit an appeal. And along with that appeal process, there was some semblance of due process, a 15-minute Zoom meeting, for example, partly during COVID, to explore the reasons why you might not have been successful. And when we looked at those explanations that were provided during the appeal process and then compared them among agencies that we worked with, we saw absolute arbitrariness in the way that the applications were scored. Very, very troubling.
So aside from potentially going to court, are there other avenues for you to pursue to reverse the state's changes? I mean, you talked about an appeals process. Is there an appeal to the appeals process through the administration, or are you left with only going to court at this point?
So we're sort of midstream in the implementation of a what we're calling a survey. Mm-hmm. So as a result of some legislation that passed after the original applications were scored, there is now an effort to open some additional slots to respond to the outcry of the consumer community and the provider community regarding how this process was handled. So the legislature said, look, we want you to go back, Department of Health. We want you to open additional slots. We want you to award additional contracts to ensure geographic diversity, to ensure cultural and ethnic diversity. And there was very specific guidance provided in the legislation regarding how that should be done. The Department of Health is now midstream in the process of conducting a survey to identify who might be eligible for those additional spots, and we are midstream in that effort. And there is a problem now because the Department of Health seems to be signaling that they're interpreting that legislation, adding these additional slots, in a very narrow way that would result in far fewer applicants being accepted as providers to the CDPAP network.
Did that legislation become law, or is it still waiting for the governor's signature?
It did become law. Okay. It is currently being implemented, and that's where this current survey period comes from. The concept is that they will open these additional provider slots. They'll be filled in accordance with the criteria, and then they're mobilizing toward a November 1st implementation date, is my understanding. So, I mean, the problem is that, first of all, it's still far too many provider slots, if you will, to remedy the fundamental problem with this process. And on top of that, the narrow interpretation of the Department of Health of that directive from the legislature on how this should be done is also troubling. So those are both significant problems that we'll be looking at from a legal perspective.
So we have all this legal maneuvering going on, but what about the conditions actually on the ground in the interim? What is happening right now in terms of the care that these, you know, 100,000 plus New Yorkers are receiving. Is that being disrupted by the change in FIs, or is that sort of on hold? Where do things stand with all that?
Well, right now, there hasn't been any disruption to date. We're concerned that that kind of chaos and disruption could occur and would occur during the notification phase. So there's a time at which the Department of Health will be directing the providers to send notification to all the consumers that they're no longer allowed to serve them and that they need to be transitioned to one of the successful offerors under the RFO. And that's where there's the potential for a lot of problems.
And what's the timeline for that?
They're talking about November 1st for an implementation date.
Okay. And is there possible that the 68 organizations might end up just swallowing up all the other organizations and still be able to provide all the same care, have the same infrastructure in place? And if that is the case, is that a bad option?
I haven't actually talked to the Department of Health about this, but I'm guessing that they're thinking that there'd be a certain amount of herding going on mm-hmm. with this process, and that the successful lead providers would be able easily to create subgroups of unsuccessful providers to support the program. But that's a pretty big assumption on their part. Mm-hmm. And when we talk to agencies that have been rejected, some of them, original pilot agencies that have been out there doing this work for the disabled and other special populations for years, it does not appear that it is clear that those agencies will be co-opted by the successful providers who have been selected as part of the 68. So there's a lot of uncertainty out there about exactly how this will happen. And ultimately, there's a concern that at bottom here, what's really going on is an effort by the state to ultimately curtail participation in the CDPAP program, that will ultimately be the result, even if it's not the stated goal.
Well, finally, what's your threshold for pursuing some sort of legal action? How do you decide when you need to go to the courts for some sort of solution to this?
So there's been a couple of pieces of legislation that have been out there that did not get approved during the budget process. We're in summer mode, as you know, here in the Capitol where mm-hmm. we're sitting. So things are pretty quiet right now.
Yeah.
Something could happen in the meantime. That seems like a long shot. So we're poised to be in a position to make some of those decisions about legal action as we approach the part of the process where there would be notification. That's really where the rubber meets the road and where the New York Advocates for Home Care will need to make some decisions about how to approach this from a legal perspective. Our hope is that with the letters that have gone out now from Senator Manchin and also just this week from Senator Gottfried regarding the concerns about how this survey is being handled, with too many slots being made available, with the misinterpretation of the guidance mm-hmm. on how that should be handled, that there'll be some change in how this survey is being handled that could slow the process down, and perhaps DOH will relent and take a second look, not only at how they're handling the survey to fill those extra spots, but perhaps on the overall program. And we look forward to perhaps having a dialogue with them before we're forced to take any legal action on those kinds of issues.
Well, we've been speaking with Linda Clark. She's a partner and chair of the healthcare litigation practice at the law firm of Barclay Damon, which has been retained by the New York Advocates for Home Care. Linda, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, David. It was so nice being with you today. Appreciate it very much.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.